This is the son of PCJ.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello and welcome to the program. Coming up today, Jason Fung, the head of Radio Australia's Chinese service, will be on the program to tell us about the social media crackdown in China as the country undergoes a leadership transition. We're going to then hear from our Beijing correspondent, Jocelyn Ford, who will tell us the backstory of what it's like to work as a foreign reporter and some of the difficulties there are to cover the 18th Party Congress, and also the difficulties how some media outlets cannot get accreditation. We will also have a short review of the Voice of America coverage of the U.S. elections and more. This is Media Network Plus. I should mention, by the way, that we would have a leadership change of our own if it wasn't for the fact that we're on the wine and we're taking part in some of life's pleasures. First, here's Paulette McQuarrie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
France 24, Monte Carlo Dualia, and RFI, which are part of AEF's media offerings, are launching a TV app exploiting all the features of Microsoft's new Windows environment for tablets, PCs, and eventually smartphones. At present, Audiovisuel Extérieur de la France's media firms claim to be the only companies providing an international news offer in three languages, French, English, and Arabic, right from the launch of this new environment. The new multilingual service will feature the live broadcast of all three media on TV and radio, on-demand programs, and live blogs, as well as news articles and alerts on internet, tablets, and mobile phones. The app already exists in French, English, and Arabic, and will be available very shortly in 9 other languages: Mandarin, Russian, Spanish, Portuguese, Persian, Vietnamese, Cambodian, Hausa, and Swahili. Moldovan state broadcaster Teleradio Moldova has decided to shut down its international channel Moldova International. According to press reports, this move could save the cash-strapped organization about 2.5 million Moldovan lu, which equates to about 160,000 euro a year. The channel began broadcasting in 2007 and was aimed at the Moldovan diaspora audience. Between 600,000 and 1 million Moldovans, about a quarter of the country's population, are believed to be living and working abroad, the majority illegally, with Russia and Italy among the more popular destinations for migrants. The channel will cease transmissions at the beginning of next year. Turner Broadcasting System has launched a 24-hour English-language entertainment channel in Pakistan, featuring Hollywood movies and TV series. WB hosts a range of Warner Brothers content, including franchises such as Harry Potter and The Lord of the Rings, as well as Friends, The Big Bang Theory, Fringe, and Nikita. The channel debuted in India 3 years ago and is now available in Pakistan through Homecast Entertainment. Steve Marcopoto, president and MD, Turner International Asia Pacific, said he hoped to appeal to Pakistan's Hollywood movie buffs. Recently, C21 revealed that Turner Broadcasting had brought forward the launch date of two of its children's channels elsewhere in Asia to December 1st. The Daily NK reports there was sadness in North Korean Gangwon province last weekend after the South Korean authorities stopped broadcasting analog television signals on the South Korean side of the border. The broadcast ceased at 2 p.m. on October 25th. The move had been planned and is in accordance with both South Korean government policy and the broader global shift to digital TV. But it was still a source of dismay in the information-starved border region. A source from the province, currently in a city bordering China, told Daily NK on Sunday, "Those people who used to watch South Korean TV in secret are very disappointed that it has suddenly been shut off. First, this strange writing came on the screen, and then the broadcast cut out," the source recalled. "People want to know whether there is another way to get the signal. But even if there is, it's not easy to buy the right equipment. The advice is that we are going to have to buy an LCD or digital TV or install some new receiver. But for ordinary people without much money, it will be hard to do that, the source concluded. Nevertheless, it's clear that the TVs have a ready market in the middle and upper classes. According to Daily NK sources in Dandong, and as persons traveling through Beijing to Pyongyang by air will be able to attest, one of the items most commonly taken into the country are flat-screen digital TVs. The BBC World Service has urged all its network news journalists to consider voluntary redundancy, as it aims to avoid compulsory layoffs as part of £42 million in budget cuts. In the wake of the government's funding cuts in 2010, the BBC's global arm is closing 73 editorial posts. Post closures include 16 in network news, which includes domestic journalists based around the UK, 14 in World Service News, and 2 in news gathering for world and business. Stephen Mitchell, the BBC's Deputy Director of News, urged staff to consider voluntary redundancy in an email sent recently. He said, "We are committed to avoiding compulsory redundancies where possible and have previously been very successful in achieving this." For these and other news stories, visit the Kim Andrew Elliott blog. You can find a link to it at the bottom of our homepage, which is www.pcjmedia.com. That's the news and media for this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, heard on the World Radio Network, Sky Digital, Sirius XM in North America, and on great partner stations everywhere. It's nice to have you with us. Well, this week, Communist Party members from around China are gathered in Beijing at the Chinese Communist Party 18th National Congress to pick a new leader. Chinese President Hu Jintao is stepping down after 10 years, and 59-year-old Xi Jinping is scheduled to take over. Along with this, new members of the Standing Committee of the Politburo will also be announced. While social media was part of the campaign strategy in the United States, and activity surged during the vote count, things are a little different in China. For most of China's public, the outcome of the Communist Party Congress is kept a secret until the end. But there is a lot of interest in social media. And how is this exactly playing out? We're now going to hear from Jason Fung, the head of Radio Australia's Chinese service, speaking to Liam Cochran.
It's very interesting. When you talk about China's election, it's been very secretive. It's also very transparent with the inverted comma, because we all know way before that who will be the next leader. We don't have to vote for anybody to know anybody going to be the leader. It's very interesting in the social media. People sarcastic about those kind of things and making fun of those kind of peculiar things happening in China. And particularly the US election is so close to the Chinese the Communist Party Congress. People comparing this to, and people very closely watching what's really happening in the United States. So, you know, lots of, if you open, turn on, get into the Weibo, you can see a lot of comments about, you know, being sarcastic about, US elections, and being sarcastic about the Chinese Communist Party things, and try to link the both. The Chinese government is very worried about the Weibo, because Weibo is a platform that people can voice their opinions and concerns. And because of sheer numbers of the posts, that the Chinese so-called internet police will not be able to find any, go through any, every single post to get rid of some of the sensitive ones. So that's why they leave about 2 hours to 3 hours of gap for people to see the posts, and then they will be deleted by the internet.
Right. So there's a two-hour lag time before the most controversial things are taken down. Well, I'm sure there are some restrictions, though. What kinds of things is the Chinese state trying to do to control the social media atmosphere?
For instance, if you talk about the names of the central government leaders like Hu Jintao, Xi Jinping, just typing their names and you send it, the thing, it'll be censored and saying that's illegal. to type their names in it. Even with the name in Chinese, the 18th Congress, 十八大, it's also been used as one of the key words to censor out all of the materials. So they don't want to talk you. They don't want you to talk about politics. They don't want to talk about. They want you to talk about, you know, the trivial things and entertainment and everything else. So they heavily censoring that. There's several rules. I've seen people complaining about it. That is, their Weibo been deleted without noticing. Noticing them, Weibo being delayed so that they can have a look at what you send it out, things like that. People are very upset about this.
I guess it poses big challenges for the traditional media in China, whether it's broadcast or print media. How are they covering the event?
Because all of the television, radio, newspapers belong to Chinese government. Of course, they can only follow the Xinhua News Agency. In a sensitive time like that, the directive from the so-called propaganda department is following Xinhua. So if Xinhua hasn't broadcast or hasn't sent a news release, news stories on certain things, don't do anything. You just use Xinhua stories. So, you know, Chinese government had a strong grip of this so-called official media.
What about other media outlets, foreign outlets and correspondents?
That's another thing. We, for the Radio Australia Chinese Service, we're experiencing dramatic drop of people visiting our website, even though we've been named as the friendly radio and media organization to China. That I believe that Chinese government might done something to it. They may not be completely blocked website, but they partially blocked website. For instance, they will not let you to download any audios. You cannot click into the story. You can only see the first paragraphs of the story and things like that. That has been used. The tactic has been used in the past.
What sort of drops is your website experiencing?
For the weekend before the Melbourne Cup, we've seen this big drop. Normally on the weekend is low, lower than the normal Monday to Friday. However, on that weekend, it's even lower. We only see 500 click on that weekend altogether.
Mm. What about specific pinpointing of particular dissidents or very vocal critics of the government? Have they been silenced over this period?
Yes, of course. This morning I have got a message from one of the Tibetan writer whose name is Wei Se. And she has been very vocal about China's policy on Tibet. And she, her husband is also a very well-known Chinese writer. And her husband was writing a letter of some sort to the New York Times and complaining the government, asking Wei Se to leave Beijing. And we also interviewed another rights lawyer, Liu Xiaoyuan, and he was also said that the police told him not to go back to Beijing until the Congress finishes in Beijing.
Mm-hmm. So how do you imagine the social media coverage and discussion will continue throughout the rest of the week and into next week?
I think what the social media will do is that people will finding ways to go around this so-called censorship. For instance, if you don't want me to type Hu Jintao's name, I can just write Hu, the name, the first name, and also having a hyphen in between the characters that will go around the thing. And also what they do is actually putting a long article as a JPEG image,
yes,
and they attach it to the Weibo itself so people can see the image and have a look at what's really happening. Mm. So, you know, the people having all sorts of ways to go around this censorship. And also, they quite interesting, they're being very clever in wording those kind of Weibo posts. So you know what they're talking about, but by looking at it literally, it's not really talking about that thing. That's, you know, Chinese people are very creative, innovative.
That was Jason Fung, the head of Radio Australia's Chinese service, speaking with Liam Cochrane. This week on our weekly news magazine, Focus Asia Pacific, our Beijing correspondent Jocelyn Ford joined us. You can hear the full conversation at www.pcjmedia.com/FAP. Towards the end of the conversation, which was about the 18th Party Congress and the weird things that they're doing, like banning ping pong balls and flying kites and even banning pigeons. That's a whole other story. You listen to the program, you'll find out more. We talked about the backstory, about what it's like working as a foreign correspondent in Beijing to cover such event. Because not all media outlets are allowed to attend, especially foreign media. They have to be from, quote, accredited and recognized foreign media. So if you work for a web-based media outlet, well, you're out of luck. This is what she had to say.
Well, they've actually streamlined this in the past few years, that now you can just apply online, and if you're credentialed, it's not a big deal. It happens more or less automatically. Now, sometimes they make you go, you know, all the way across town to pick up your credentials, and they always assume that you'll have, you know, at least 10 assistants working for you, so that it's really easy to do that and do all the interviews. But, you know, the internet has made our lives somewhat easier.
But I mean, for example, let's say you're a freelancer that's flying into China to cover this. Would they turn you away, or do you have to be a correspondent already based in China?
Oh, well, no, there's something like 1,700, according to a headline, there was something like 1,700 reporters will be covering this, and overseas reporters, you know, they always make a big deal. They want the whole world to watch the ceremony as long as they don't criticize it, of course. Reporters overseas can apply for credentials, but usually, and I'm not familiar with what's happened this year, but if you're a freelance reporter, that's really frowned upon. You need to have, you know, usually you need to have a well-known organization backing you. And one of the big problems now, of course, is that since much of the international media or new media is appearing that is only online, and China has not yet recognized that online journalists are actually journalists, that if you work for something, you know, like the Huffington Post, for example, you probably wouldn't be recognized as a journalist and get credentials to come and cover this. And so that's, you know, that's a big issue that media has yet to deal with here, or the international media hasn't really come out very forcefully on, and the Chinese government is very reluctant to change its rules because, of course, they are very concerned about what if journalists for their own online media thought that they should have the rights of state, you know, Xinhua, et cetera, et cetera. That would be a real problem.
I suppose at the same time, they're also afraid, let's say, of citizen journalists going into the system.
Oh, my gosh. Please, don't even mention it. That is, yeah, I mean, some of the citizen journalists in China have done very amazing work and developed a real following, and the state does its best to stamp them out.
That was our Beijing correspondent, Jocelyn Ford, talking about the little backstory behind the 18th National Congress underway in China. The other big story this week, if you haven't heard, and that's, of course, if you've been asleep, was the re-election for a second term of U.S. President Barack Obama. Most U.S. media outlets were giving almost 24-hour coverage during that period. Now, I was actually able to watch a lot of it and listen to a lot of the radio as well. Now, the Voice of America, between 2 and 6 hours UTC on Election Day, added extra frequencies and times to cover the U.S. presidential elections. Now, I'm a bit of a fan of the Voice of America, and I've mentioned this many times on the program. And I have to say that during this presidential election, the VOA, as far as I'm concerned, came on top in terms of coverage. Far better than the BBC World Service. Way better than CNN International or Fox News or any of the other Western media outlets. The Voice of America not only analyzed the results, but also at the same time gave a lot of historical information on the U.S. elections.
Welcome to VOA News, continuing election night coverage, USA Votes 2012. Coming to you on VOA TV, radio, and on the internet at voanews.com. I'm Eric Felton, and I'm here with VOA's senior national correspondent, Jim Malone. Well, Jim, this has been a night with a very, very close race, but one that looks like it's been resolved at this point.
I think so, Eric. In the end,
Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States, will remain the president of the United States for another 4 years. He's won re-election. He won the key states that he had to. We'll go over that in a minute. But if you look at the states that were focused on by both candidates, both campaigns, states like Ohio, Colorado, Iowa, Wisconsin, they all leaned toward Mr. Obama. There was something there with their, what we call their ground game.
That, of course, was a little sampling of the VOA's coverage of the U.S. elections, where Barack Obama won a second term. Now, what was interesting about the entire coverage is when it began, it came from the VOA English radio, and then during the course of the broadcast, they went to VOA television. Now, we've seen cases before where television news is relayed on radio. Now, many times, or rather I should say most of the time, it doesn't make any sense because, of course, television, as you know, is a visual medium. So if something's happening, there's usually a caption. And if you're listening to just the audio, you really have no idea about what's going on. But the VOA was very smart during this because during their coverage, when they were relaying the audio from the Voice of America TV, they realized, I think this was done, of course, done on purpose, that there's not just a video audio audience watching, but also a audio audience watching at the same time. So they were very clear on that. And I have to say, if we did have an award, I would have to give it right away to the VOA on their coverage on election night. And by the way, Dan Robinson, if you're listening right now, I enjoyed the coverage you did from the Obama camp. It was really a lot of fun. Anyway, let's now move on. You're listening, of course, to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, heard around the world on great partner stations everywhere, the World Radio Network, Sirius XM in North America, Sky Digital, and, of course, other platforms as well. This week and next week, we're giving away a book. Yes, a book. And this is a fascinating book. It is about Radio Canada International. As you know, we've been paying quite a bit of attention on the program about RCI because of their drastic cut, and now the proposal to close, or rather the closure, I should say, of the Radio Canada International Sackville Relay. There's been some developments on that, which is kind of odd because what's happened? The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation contacted the CBC. Now, they just knocked on the door and said, look, we want to revoke all the licenses for the Sackville Relay Station for October 31st. Well, this sort of has happened, but not really, because the CBC Northern Service is continuing, and they have pushed back the sign-off of the station to December 1st. I should mention, of course, there are things happening behind the scene that when we hear about, we will report on the program. Anyway, let's get back to the book that I want to tell you about. The book is called The Age of International Radio, Radio Canada International, 1945 to 2007. The book was written by Elżbieta Olachowska. Now, Elżbieta Olachowska worked at Radio Canada International. She was the head of the Eastern European language services, like Russian, Ukrainian, Polish, etc. And this is a fascinating book. It is a fascinating book because it covers its history, its early days. It gives data on how you'd compare, let's say, RCI to other international broadcasters, like Deutsche Welle, YLE Radio Finland, Radio Japan, The Voice of America, and others. And there's also some fascinating pictures in here of the early directors, some of the staff, including a very young Wojtek Gwiazda, who we recently had on the program. Anyway, we have two copies to give away, and we're going to be announcing the winners in 2 weeks' time. If you want to have a chance to win, write us an email, and all the emails will be going into a pod, and we'll have a lucky draw to see who the winner is. The email address to send it to is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And good luck. Good luck. Who knows what name our fingers will pull out of the bowl when we put them all together. That's MNP at PCJmedia.com. Let's now find out what we can expect for propagation over the next 7 days. Here's our own Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from November 10th to November 16th, 2012. The 10.7-centimeter flux starts out at 110 on November 10th, followed by a 10.7-centimeter flux of 115 from November 11th to November 14th, 2012. November 15th, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 120, and 115 for the 10.7-centimeter flux on November 16th. An A-index of 10 on November 10th and 11th, followed by an A-index of 5 on November 12th, an A-index of 8 November 13th, November 14th through November 16th, we'll see an A-index of 5. The KP index is 3 for the first 2 days of this week. That's November 10th and 11th, followed by a drop of 1 point down to 2 on November 12th. November 13th, back up to 3. November 14th through November 16th, a KP index of 2. Sunspot 1607 is passing out of view, and we have 1605, 06, 08, and 09 in view. No flares at this time with low solar activity. A minor solar wind stream flowing from a coronal hole on the sun's southeast region should have reached Earth on November 4th and 5th. Back to you, Keith.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan Hensley. Before we go, I just want to mention again about the book, or rather the two books that we're giving away, The Age of International Radio by Elżbieta Olechowska, looking at the history of Radio Canada International from 1945 to 2007. We're going to have the lucky draw in 2 weeks for these two books. So just send us an email, mnp at pcjmedia.com. That's mnp at pcjmedia.com. And please do include your mailing address. A few times we've had people say, oh, I want to win something, and they write us. They don't put a mailing address. We write them back, asking them for what it is, and we don't hear from them again. Actually, one time we heard from a guy a year later, and we said, well, we didn't hold on to it that long. We held on to it for about a month, but you didn't get in touch with us until 12 months later. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. At the beginning of today's show, our opening signature was a little different. Well, I mean, it always is different. But this was actually the opening signature of another program called the International Radio Report that airs on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. You can go to ckut.ca to listen to their program Sundays. You'll find it in the program schedule. It's hosted by Sheldon Harvey, who was on the program, and Janice Law, who's also been on the program. Anyway, they're celebrating their 25th anniversary on the air. Yes, that's right. The International Radio Report is celebrating their 25th anniversary. So we're going to end with today, the theme song to the show when the show began all those years ago, Europe Endless by Kraftwerk. So on behalf of Paulette McQuarrie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you in 7 days' time. 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.